So where are we and who are you?
Well,
what are we going to talk about?
We're in Building 41 in Redmond, Washington.
Famous building.
That's a start, yep. Yeah. And my name's Cameron Slade. I'm the test manager in the Visual Studio Group, and I work on Visual Fox Pro and the database tools for Visual Studio. And we're just finished up shipping Whidbey, and now we're in the middle of a thing called MQ, which is our quality milestone, which we're doing just a lot of work of getting Orcus ready to go and start designing features for Orcus. So.
And just to remind people these code names, Whidbey is what and Orcus is what?
Whidbey is Visual Studio 8 or Visual Studio 2005, and Orcus is
the next version, Visual Studio.
Whatever year that ships in.
Right.
So
what's your background at Microsoft? How long have you been, at Microsoft?
I'm coming up on 15 years at Microsoft.
Wow.
And just to show you how dated I am, the first product I worked on, I worked in product support for Windows 3.1.
Yeah.
And then I worked on DOS 5.
Doing what?
Doing product support.
Support.
I talked to customers on the phone
and worked through
various crises, anywhere from how to use the copy command to I upgraded to DOS 5 and now my hard drive won't boot.
Was a lot of that on the phone?
Yeah, it was all on the phone.
Yeah.
This was really before the internet or any of that stuff, right?
CompuServe a little?
Uh-huh. Well, then I moved over and worked on the Fox Pro team and I worked on CompuServe there and got to support things like the report writer and things like that. So, and then I came to a product group at Microsoft over in building, I think 25 was the first building I was at, and that was Visual Fox Pro
3.
And that's where I met you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Yeah, and worked on the class designer a little bit because I worked on the class browser. Yeah, and worked on object-oriented language.
It's a weird thing because I developed that, designed it, and you helped test it.
Right.
So here we are, how many years? 13 years later?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, 14 years? Yeah. So.
And you worked on the ADO team? So
I worked on, and then after Fox Pro 3, 5, somewhere in that time frame, I went over, Fox kind of got merged all together with all the ADO, ODBC, OADB technologies, MDAC as it was called. And from there I went and I worked on bringing Microsoft or getting Microsoft an Oracle ODBC driver. So I worked on a small team getting that put together. Then I worked as the release manager for MDAC.
MDAC?
Yeah,
MDAC.
MDAC.
Before the famous, what version of MDAC do you have on your machine?
Yes.
What version do you have? Most developers that programmed in the late 90s know about MDAC.
Yeah, I don't know if you can thank me or curse me for what happened there, but I think we did some good work there where we tried to get MDAC all kind of shipping together and not just various pieces shipped all over the place, and we worked to get MDAC into Windows 2000 is when the first version of Windows where MDAC actually shipped as part of the OS, and I worked on getting that taken care of and whatnot. So
even though you do the test managing for Fox Pro and also basically the query data and database tools for Whidbey,
right?
There's a lot of processes and tools and methodology that go into what you do that the whole division uses for like Visual Studio, right?
Oh yeah, it's huge. I don't know how many testers are in. There's probably 800 some odd testers in developer division, and all of them, well, not all of them, but all of them use these tools, and a large percentage of them contribute to the tools in some way. So
how much commonality exists between how your test team tests and does quality control versus like the C# team or even the SQL Server team? Or, is it a lot of similarities even though you're working on...
Well, I think a lot of the processes and the methodologies that they use are the same. We're all kind of bought into a common Microsoft methodology of testing and completeness. As far as tools go, I would say the tools that you know, this team and the VB team and the C-sharp team are very similar. We all use a test case manager and run tool called Mad Dog.
Mad Dog?
It's called Mad Dog.
What's the origin of that name?
I don't know what the origin of that name is. It's it was developed by the VB team, you know, way back when, back in, you know, VB probably 3 days. I don't know what the...
I mean, testers are always in a good mood because everything works great and there's no problems, so yeah, I don't know where they came up with Mad Dog. That's what our program manager's idea.
Yeah, right. So Mad Dog's like this huge thing that manages all our test cases, takes care of configuring machines, running the tests, reporting results. It's pretty amazing.
It's an internal tool. It's a big app that's
It's all written in, well, right now, basically it's developer division, and then there's a couple other tools that kind of perform similar capabilities.
Is it like SQL Server and VB.net or something, or what is that app?
Well, it's all the data is stored in SQL Server, and then there's also Source Depot is involved in it, and then it's a VB.net application.
That
you know, actually UI, and I think there's a middle tier that is involved in.
So now a lot of Microsoft employees for years, they kind of live daily by email, you know, and for the test team, beyond email, there's a thing called Product Studio.
Right.
Describe more about what this is. It used to be called RAID years ago. RAID isn't a bug killer.
Right.
But it's like, usually
and
have...
before that, there was a Fox RAID that we used to
use
back in Fox 3.0.
It was written in Fox Pro.
Yeah.
So. But now most Microsoft teams pretty much uses this.
Yeah.
And
well, actually, then we're moving, you know, eventually we're going to move to the new... you know, product data or bug database that Team System is putting together. So eventually, at least this division will move to using that at some point.
So that we're using the same database tool that ships with the...
Yeah, I think dog fooding is a big part of what we do around here.
It's like Outlook. We use Outlook, but we create Outlook as a product.
Well, you know, something like Mad Dog is all written in .NET. It is at some point we... switched over from using, the runtime 1.1 to the WIDB runtime, the 2.0 runtime, and dog-fooded Mad Dog.
Now, but that's just the components. Eventually, we'll be using the actual bug tracking application that's included. Right now, it's a custom internal Microsoft tool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I would assume you and people on your team and other people in quality control have this Product Studio app open as often as you have Outlook open.
Well, I would say everybody in the division has it open because, you know, program managers are looking at bugs. They're deciding, you know, who should work on this, who needs to investigate this. You know, I spend in the middle of a product cycle, I'm in a, you know, almost every kind of lead manager in the division is in a room someplace doing, you know, triaging bugs as they come in from either internally or from places like Ladybug, you know, the tool that people use to enter bugs out on the web. So we're triaging bugs. So, you know, developers, testers, PM, everyone's in there.
So each bug that's reported, either found internally or reported by a customer, you know, from product support or from the MSDN Feedback Center,
right. It
has a bug ID. It's like a unique ID.
Right.
And it's almost like each bug has like a life form because it tends to get comments and assign priority and then assign to somebody, and it kind of moves around that way. Maybe assign to you, and then you might say, hey, I know this guy, he's going to own it now, or this person's going to figure it out, or now it's assigned back to the developer for them to say, fix this.
Right.
And it goes to one. So what's that process? What's a typical cycle? Cause someone goes to the product feedback center on MSDN, submits, hey, I found this dialogue doesn't do the right thing, or whatever.
Right.
And then it actually goes into the Product Studio database?
Yeah, there's a pump that pumps it into Product Studio, and then eventually...
Who sees it first? Some tester or some product... Who sees the newly reported customer bug first?
Typically, it probably comes into triage, and then triage decides, you know, is this something, you know, the bug report is complete enough and we understand the problem well enough that we're just... go, yeah, we're going to fix that, or no, that's by design, or whatever. And if it And if we decide that, we'll assign it to a developer, and he will fix the bug. And then the next step is that that bug will get checked in, and a build will get done. And then typically what will happen is the bug will get assigned to a tester at that point. And what he will do is he will verify that the bug is fixed in the particular build that the developer says it was fixed in. And then he will typically look at the bug and say, okay, here's obviously an area that either we didn't test thoroughly enough, or we didn't think about this scenario, or maybe we were planning to do test this in this way, we just hadn't got to us, and this customer just beat us to the punch on this particular area. So then what will happen, you know, he'll kind of work through all those issues, decide whether, you know, new tests need to be written, and write those tests, you know, plan those tests, write those tests, note all that stuff in the bug, and then what will happen is the bug will get closed. And at what point, when the bug gets resolved, there'll get comments will get put in there for the customer saying, "Hey, we fixed your bug," or, you know, "We're not going to be able to fix the bug this version because we're just so late in the cycle," or "This bug is by design. This is," and we'll try to explain why.
So what are the various status? There's you know, close. Well, I mean, there's like we will fix it. There's, we won't fix it, it's by design, it's a duplicate, right? There's a set of status flags.
Well, there's you've kind of mixed it. So the status is, it's either active, it's resolved, or it's closed. So active means it's sitting there working on it. It's, if it's resolved, we've said, you know, this is what we think this bug is, we're done with this bug.
And the developer has fixed the bug, but yet the tester
hasn't. Well, resolve could come about by a number of things, right? It could be, say, resolve fixed, resolve postponed,
resolve duplicate,
resolve by design.
Yeah, okay.
You know, all these different things.
But then it's not closed yet. So what takes it to be closed?
It gets closed when it either gets assigned back to a tester and he does this, you know, testing on it to make sure it's closed, or it gets assigned back to whoever opened it, really, and then that person kind of gets the last say as to, you know, you say, "Oh, this is by design," and maybe, you know, maybe the person that resolved it as by design didn't really understand all the implications of why you thought this was a bug, or didn't understand the bug correctly, and then there's a conversation about that, and that can either be a face-to-face conversation, a conversation through the bug, or a conversation through email.
Generally, the person that closes it is the person that submitted it.
So
it's like saying, okay, and the bug stays in the database forever. You don't just like remove it from.
So it's always there. So you could always, you know, go back and see what the life of a bug, what an issue was, you know.
And the Product Studio has the ability to do queries, and you can say, okay, give me all the bugs assigned to me. Give me all the ones, you know, for this, you know, that are this status. What do you call it? A priority.
Right.
Priority one.
Yeah.
Priority. So what are these priorities 1 through 4? How do you just What's a pry 1, pry 2, pry 3, pry 4?
Well, a pry 1 is... Oh, you're making it hard to give me a test here.
So sometimes people in the Microsoft world, they go online, they say to a customer, "Oh, this is like a pry 3 bug. I don't think we're going to fix this." And then someone out there in Europe is reading this going, "Okay, what's this lingo, pry 3?
Okay,
what is it?" So,
so pry 1 is, this issue basically needs to be fixed right now. It's a bug that breaks a major scenario, and basically work can't go on without this bug being fixed.
Corruption.
Well, no, that's a severity. That's different,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
So priority is basically, I go file new project, and the project fails to be created. So who's ever testing or working on projects, they're basically dead in the water until that bug gets fixed as far as doing testing and whatnot. SEV 2 is, you know, it's a major defect, or Pry 2 is a major defect. It needs to be fixed before we ship the next milestone.
Okay.
And
Could be a new version or a service pack, whatever. It's like the next big release update.
Yeah.
Dot one, whatever.
Or a beta, yeah. Or even a CTP, the next CTP we do. It should be at the top of the list of bugs that gets fixed. Threes are generally something that we probably should fix if we can. But usually there's a workaround form, or it's not a mainline scenario to get it fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then a four is usually, kind of a niggly. A word is misspelled, or maybe there's a minor redraw issue.
I think it's things like, a label is off one pixel.
Yeah, yeah.
If you maximize it like 500%, you would find it.
Right, right.
Little tidbit things.
Right, yeah.
And a lot of them are UI, right?
Yeah, and then there's always this spectrum of, is it a two or a three, and is it really a three, or, there's...
It must be fun internally when people have different opinions about what priority or severity something is.
Oh, yeah.
Because it could be of interest to the product they work on. It could be an impact to how much resource it's going to take to deal with it, how many people are impacted by it. I mean, if only three people in the entire world are impacting this and there's a workaround, it makes it a lot less critical, right?
Unless you're one of those three people, obviously.
Good point. So what's severity? Severity is different than priority,
yeah,
right?
Severity is kind of the impact of the bug. So a SEV1 is, there's crash, data loss, memory corruption, those types of things. SEV2 is, most bugs are usually Pry2, SEV2. That's kind of that's most bugs that we fix are right in that main line. So SEV2 is... it gets kind of blurry between Pry2 and SEV2, but it's, it doesn't crash, but there's a major impact to product functionality. So
rare to have like Pry1, SEV4, something like that. I mean,
where you kind of, usually the interaction is, it's usually a Pry2 SEV1 would be a bug that, it crashes, mm-hmm. but it's not sitting in the middle of a, it's not a mainline scenario and not,
And then there's bugs that impact other areas. So, like, you could have something break, and then this whole area of the product doesn't even function, and then that means you can't even test.
Yeah, so that would be a Pry1. Yeah. You need to get that fixed as soon as possible.
And that these kind of things, priority and severity, they really help the developers figure out which bugs to go fix first in their list that are assigned to them.
Yes, it's basically a way for everybody to look at the list of work items and decide what needs to get fixed first is really the way that people use it.
So do developers decide which bugs they fix first? Does program manager or testers have input? How does this...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there can be, we can go and I can say, we need this, QA needs this bug fixed right away, and we need this elevated to the top of the list.
By the way, QA, quality assurance. Same thing.
We kind of use them interchangeably. Right. But in general, developers are left to their own devices as far as which bugs they fix. But generally, they work down the list. They start at one and just start working down the list and going through the
Now
bugs.
This whole thing with priority, severity, and the process, about everything we're talking about applies to like Windows and Office just the same as Visual Studio.
Right.
It's been around for years, and is there anything like that online? Do we publish anything like that? I wonder if maybe people blog about it or put something online. Because a lot of people, they might start doing their own testing of their app or with a team, but they don't have basically standards to start on.
I don't know. I know that people have talked about it. I'd have to go.
So then once you have this process and the bugs, people don't just ad hoc test the product, right? There's automation tools, test cases, right? That's a big part of the
ad hoc is, that's kind of a loaded question. So
it means I click around and I run the app like a user and I find anything.
Oh, yeah, we do that. Yeah.
But I mean, beyond that, some people that build apps with our tools, that's all they do.
Right.
Ad hoc.
Yeah.
But in here, we do a lot more than just ad hoc.
Well, we, I mean, there's various aspects to testing, right? So we try to take a very systematic approach to features. So as the feature's being designed and spec'd, QA is in the background writing, you know, what test plans and test specs, deciding, you know, what, how we're going to test this, what we need to test, running those plans by developers, the developers that are working on that feature and the PMs that are working on that features, and saying, and getting feedback and buy-off, saying, you know, are we thinking about this the right way, and vice versa. Test is in the planning meetings as features are getting planned, looking at them, saying, you know, have you thought about this? Have you thought about this aspect of this feature?
Right.
And there's a lot of test implications if you do it this way versus if you do it some other way.
And just feature-wise, how much does the test teams have an impact on what features get put in the shipping version of a product?
Oh, it's
like,
huge.
We're working on the Orcus next version of Visual Studio, and you could have a whole nice list of feature set, and there might be some devs that can really crank out the C++ code pretty fast.
Right.
And you can say, well, we can do this, this, and this. But then you have this meeting with the test people, test team, and they start analyzing how much it's going to take to create, build test cases, sign off on it, and do all that. And sometimes that is the limiting factor of how many features you can get in the product.
Well, it's almost always a limiting factor. I mean, yeah, I mean...
And I don't think a lot of Microsoft customers realize that that's the case. They say, okay, why didn't you put this feature in the product?
Well,
and it wasn't that we didn't want to.
Yeah, you know, you really think about it, you know, a feature is, a dev can go write a single feature, and it takes him, I don't know, a week to go write it, right? But then you take and you multiply, take that feature and figure out that you've got to run it on, I don't know, I think we shipped, you know, close to 14 or 15 SKUs in WIDB. You know, across, I don't even know how many OSs we've got to test on. You know, there's 20 some odd OSs, a whole slew of languages.
Right.
And then, you know.
You mean like localization languages?
Yeah, you know, yeah. English, German, yeah. Japanese, you know, right. Thai, Turkish,
right.
And then there's the right to left languages.
Yeah.
And so there's all those languages. So that one feature, the number of, you know, just if you just think about it, platforms and
right.
SKUs, you know, just explodes the amount of work that has to happen on there.
So you could add one small feature, say, you know what, we're going to create a new dialogue.
Right.
Just a new dialogue.
Yeah.
And the developer could probably whip it up in a day sometimes, got a few text boxes.
Right.
And it's simple, right?
Right.
Maybe it edits an XML file, whatever it does behind the scenes. And then they're done. And someone could write a spec on it in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. But then you say, okay, test, what's it going to take to test it and sign off? And every time we do updates to the betas,
yep.
you got to retest it and all the languages and everything. It's, that's the big effort, right?
Yeah. And then we're, you know, testing on old platforms and then new platforms, you know. So we were testing on Vista for a good chunk of week.
And there's
too.
Big labs here, right, with just machine after machine.
Oh, yeah, huge labs.
That people go in and do kinds of testing on.
We have probably a pretty small lab. We have, you know, close to 100 machines in our lab. And,
I see.
And we're on the smallish side of labs.
You mean smallish as compared to, like, Windows and Office? What do you mean
smallish? Smallish on the compared to, like, VB or...
Oh,
or,
you mean VS Data.
Yeah, the CLR or, you know, any of those guys over there. So
do you have anything to show on the computer that gives people an idea of what kind of tools we use internally, even Product Studio, anything? So let's see, what does someone that's testing the product see, deal with?
Yeah, so... oops. Trying to remember my password here. Yeah, so. So here's Mad Dog, and I'll move it over to that, over to the screen over there, over that nice.
You got a dual screen going here?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll move it over here.
Uh-huh.
And so this is Mad Dog right here. So you can see it looks like pretty much every application. Actually, this is just one kind of facet of Mad Dog. This is called Mad Dog Explorer, and what we're looking at right now is this is a run that we have set up that's actually already run. And this is called a nightly. And a nightly, we use nightlies to kind of just do validation on a given build.
Uh-huh.
So every time a build comes out, we'll run a nightly on it. And it's a fairly small subset, and we just use it to validate that the build is good and a majority or all the kind of major features are working at a very high level. So I can, you know, I can start the server explorer, and I can connect to a database, and I can drill down and see what's in there, and I can pull up the table designer, and you know, that's just kind of our feature. So that's what this is right here.
Okay.
So as you look at it, you can see this is what we've named. This is what we've named the run right here. So this is the build number, what we call the VBL, or the virtual build lab it came out of, and some other kind of information. And I named this for Channel 9 because I did it for this video. We ran this actually right before New Year's. And then this is a test case query right here. So if we click on this, this will come up. And this is all query driven. So these are all the test cases that are in this particular run. And then we just, you know, define a set of criteria that, you know, this is all kind of...
Like we talked about priority.
Yeah, this is more priority stuff. Yeah. But this is all kind of just gobbledygook that we use to help define... You know,
right, the metadata of the
book. The metadata of every test. Yeah. And then we can query against that to just decide which tests we want to run.
Right.
So... And then, let's see, and this is the product, and this sets up and tells us where to go get the product from. So if you look over here, this tells us what product we're going to install, what version, what milestone, which basically tells it where to go get it, what build, which is the retail build, the platform,
see,
IBM.
It's not only multiple languages, it's multiple product SKUs or
yeah.
you know, versions. It
yeah.
can be the Express version, it can be the
exactly.
Enterprise, you know, the test team
right.
suite. It
can be Pro version. And then as part of this, we have all these install steps. So this, we take and Mad Dog will take and install the product for it. Mad Dog will go and image the machine for us and put the appropriate OS on the machine for us.
Oh, wow.
And then it will install, you know, various products and set the machine up into such a way that our run will work. So, like, we disable the screensaver because we don't want the screensaver coming up. And you know, in this one, we're installing the Oracle 9 client and... We've got to set up the Windows firewall, and we got to do a whole bunch of other stuff like that.
A lot of things that are repetitive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I got a lot of smart people that work for me, and there's a lot of smart people that are working in the QA business. And, you know, I don't want them sitting there clicking through. I'm not going to keep people very long, and they're not going to be very interested sitting there setting up machines.
Yeah.
So this is all automated, and somebody writes, and a lot of these packages that you see are extensible and used across the division. So anybody can grab one to, like, if one of my guys writes a package to install Oracle, somebody else can grab it and go, oh, you know, I can just use their package to install Oracle, and that work doesn't have to get repeated.
Now, during the development cycle of each product, especially after one ships, there's a lot of conversation goes on around how to make all this stuff better each time around. You know, especially now that Whidbey was shipped, I hear a lot of talk about, oh, you know, those Lab 22, Lab 23, and
right.
there's, like, dependencies, and sometimes you're dependent on maybe the SQL Server group to provide some component that you need
mm-hmm.
to have a proper build in order to test and sign off on.
Right.
There's a lot of this going on,
yeah.
right? It's like
yeah.
building blocks.
Yeah, exactly. So the next tab here, this shows all the machines in the lab that are sitting there right now. So this
cool.
machine is going to be against a... this is going to be against a Windows XP English x86, and it's got SP2 already installed. So as you can see, there are 60 machines just sitting there with this OS installed. And available machines, there's 29, and then we've set aside one that once the run is done, mm-hmm. that machine will just stay there so that if there's any failures, there's always a machine available, an environment that's exactly what this test run was done, so people can go back and try to repro and see exactly what happened with that. And so you can see that we've got 7 machines set aside. We're going to keep one on this. And this is, these are just some run flags and whatnot that we use, that it's nothing really overly interesting there. And then these are the results of the test. So here's kind of the history of the run.
Like a log file?
Yeah, it just kind of shows how it was started, completed, you know, when it was started, when it was completed, when it was resumed.
Right,
and then here are the results. We have passed, failed, da-da-da-da-da. And if we want to go view the results, we just click on this button right here, and I'll kind of show you what it looks like when a machine, or what a test gets run. We can kind of just look at that, and you can kind of see that. I don't know.
So what the main areas of information are like bugs, right? List of bugs.
Right.
There's a list of test cases.
Yeah.
And then there's machines.
And test results.
And results.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's
like
kind of
matrix.
That's
good.
So.
And this whole tool, Mad Dog, is a, it's like an overall way of viewing it, reporting it, managing it.
And yeah. And, yeah. So if we go and we say, let me connect to this machine. So VDT370-04. Hopefully this will work.
So you go, I see you're remoting into a machine.
Yeah.
That's pretty common, I bet, right?
Yeah.
For people to remote into other machines.
Oh, so yeah.
Testing on machines that aren't in their office.
Remote desktop and terminal server is just huge for us.
Yeah.
It's just a huge tool that we use that, and then we use Avocet, and which is a KVM keyboard video mouse solution that we plug, and it plugs right into the network, and then we can access any of those machines just like we were sitting at them. So if the machine gets hung during the boot, or we want to go see what it's not in a, you can't get to it through terminal server or remote desktop, we can basically go and do, just like we're sitting at the machine and access.
So is virtual PC used much or not too often?
Yeah, we used, before Microsoft bought virtual PC, my team on the Fox team was using VMware quite a bit. We had a license for VMware and used it internally. And, yeah, people are using it all over the place for various aspects of testing. And, and it's really nice because you can set up a environment and actually get it to the point where you're right at the repro scenario. So if it takes you, half an hour to get to the point where you repro a problem, you can set that up and then go and then basically dehydrate the virtual machine, save it off, and then send it over to someone, send it over to someone, go, oh, just fire that up, and
it's like a portable machine.
Yeah, exactly. And people are using it for all kinds of interesting things. So, like, if I've got a server that doesn't, I have a server that I rarely use, but I don't want to set aside a machine for it, I'll set up a virtual server for it. So we're going to say run this this case against this machine right here, this VDT3704. So I'll say okay. And it's resetting the results. And now here's this machine right here. That's the machine, and you should see it. Hopefully, we'll see it work.
Now, test team members create new test cases, right? I mean, sometimes it involves code too.
Oh yeah, all the test cases are.
I mean, a lot of people on the test team actually write code, and people don't realize that. They're not like developer, as in they're putting code that ships in the product, but they're building scripting code.
Oh, yeah, there's a huge amount of code. Let's move this over here when that starts running, we'll bring it back. But another thing that we do a lot of here is we do what's called, we write automation abstractions. And what that means is that we, instead of automating directly against the component, we write basically a class that people use to automate a particular piece of functionality. And there's a lot of reasons for doing that. One of them is that if the underlying feature changes, all we have to do, theoretically, is to change the automation abstraction, and then all those tests should theoretically continue to run. Whereas if you programmed directly against the UI, the minute a UI change happens, then we would have to go back and rewrite all those tests, which could be in the hundreds, you know, so something like that. So,
how many test cases are in, like, would be?
Or Foxconn? Well, I mean, my group has, it's in the, you know, a test case is, you know, for somebody like the C++ team, they have, like, hundreds of thousands of test cases because they write a lot of, you know, they write a lot of API tests, people can write, you know, a ton of those. We have a couple thousand.
When you say we, you have two teams and you're one team.
Yeah, well, Fox has about 6,000 test cases.
Okay. And that's written in FoxPro. It's not using Mad Dog.
Well, it does use Mad Dog, but all the cases are written in FoxPro.
Now, for WIDBY and the VS Data, that was the query designer and the database designer for WIDBY.
Query designer, database designer, server explorer. Yeah, so if you, while we're talking here, this is this test case running while we talk. So you can see it's sitting here. It's setting up the machine. It's getting everything ready, and then
what's this window doing?
It just kind of tells you what's going. What's going on, and this is basically running.
So you're doing a test case ad hoc. Obviously, there's stuff that happens automatically when you have a new build.
Well, no, this is I'm ad hocing running this case, but this case is fully automated. It'll sit here and run.
Yeah.
And this is used as an automation library we call DAV test.
Automation happens overnight in the evening when people are gone from work.
You mean when do we run?
Yeah.
It can happen anytime, but generally speaking, we try to kick it off in the
come back in the morning and see what happens.
Yeah, and we have results in the morning, right?
So gives you something to look forward to driving to work.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you're always hoping that it ran.
You ever see those emails? Who broke the build?
Yeah. No, I
somebody. Well, hit it a bug they didn't expect, and it made all the test cases fail.
When I worked in MDAC, I got a few calls in the middle of the night saying, "Hey, your guys broke the build. Get down here and fix this right now." So they were pretty hardcore about it. Right. So they actually passed pagers out to everyone, and you had to have a pager. And so those were interesting times. So so what were we talking about? We were talking about the VS Data guys, which is all, you know, the server explorer and all that. We have a couple thousand tests that we have automated. And we still have, you know, manual tests and whatnot.
So what's being used to automatically run these dialogs?
We have a test library called DAV test.
What if a developer using like Visual Studio wants to create their own test that like push buttons and launch stuff automatically? Is there third-party tools to do it?
Yeah, there are. I mean, there's third-party tools that, you know, I don't want to mention any.
Yeah, exactly.
But they know who they are, and people can.
But it's not built in. We had to.
No. There'll probably always be a need for kind of a framework to take care of it.
Right.
But and interestingly enough, the next version of active accessibility in Longhorn, it's called Mita, and it's going to actually combine
Longhorn Vista.
What did I say?
It's Longhorn.
Vista. Yeah, it's, you know, old habits die hard. It's called Mita, and it's actually a really smart way of combining the needs of. I mean, if you think about it, the needs of, you know, active accessibility and people being able to automate and get to feature or to various functionality without using the mouse or using voice activation or using eyes tracking it's kind of the same technology that QA uses to automate stuff. So they've combined that and taken the kind of the best of both worlds to create this new standard for controls.
It seems like there's two things happening kind of simultaneously. One is the products we ship are including more and more of the internal tools that you use, especially for developers. So more and more of our test tools are being included in Visual Studio. At the same time, we're going to use more of the tools to ship Visual Studio, like the database stuff, internally rather than the customized stuff. So it's more and more of a common thing.
Yeah. So the other thing that we do is we write these automation libraries. And a good example of one is, a need for one of these is, this is the Server Explorer over here. And there's this idea in the Server Explorer that you can change the view of it. So this is the default view, and it just has everything listed by its in kind of the standard format: database, diagrams, tables, views, right? Or you can change this and say view it by schema. So now everything is in its actually, I don't have any database diagrams. So you have here's all the objects, and they're listed by their schema. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is that as testers, we just say, "Oh, I know, I want to go and I want to open up the authors table to in the table designer, right?" Mm-hmm. Well, what the automation abstraction layer does for this is that all the tester has to do is go, "Oh, I want to open up the authors table," and regardless of what view the Server Explorer is in, the abstraction layer knows how to navigate and go open that table and get to the right spot. Right. So it makes it, and if we added a new view, all we would have to do is change the abstraction, and it would just automatically work.
Right.
So that's kind of one of the benefits, and it's actually kind of a cool implementation of automation abstraction and how it really kind of benefits, you know, people every day.
Right.
So.
And I assume that the QA test team has input as how a feature is implemented. I think you mentioned something about this a little earlier. I mean, you just rely on the developer to just code up whatever was in the specifications that the program manager wrote, and then you get it. But at the same time, there might be some understanding on the test side of how it was implemented and how that might impact other areas, performance. I mean, performance is a big factor.
Yeah.
That QA test team spends a lot of time on performance and security and all these things.
Performance, security, stress scenarios. But, I mean, so a lot of the guts of how something's implemented aren't necessarily, you know, we're not involved in every one of those decisions. A lot of that's left to the developer. But, you know, we're trying to be involved as involved as possible in a feature and think through all the possible issues with dev and PM about what are the implications of implementing this, what are some possible, test hooks or ways that would make this more testable if you automated it in a little bit or implemented it in a little bit different of a way. So, there's... I worked on a product in MSN where, you know, it was this highly scalable cache that we worked on. And instead of trying to reboot machines, what we would do is we just, you know, part of the testing infrastructure is we made it possible to kind of fake one of the servers going down just at the component level.
Right.
And it was, or tell the... What we do is we tell the various components or the various servers that one of the servers was down, and we could automate through this and through we could automate that, and we just got the developer to implement some method calls for us, and I mean that stuff goes on all the time.
So what you showed is a pretty good quick tour, essentially, of the processes and the tools that get used for testing.
Right.
You think what we've talked about and shown is a pretty good window into, you know, except going to the meetings where there might be some disagreements or just hard decisions to make.
Right.
I mean, it gives you an idea, somebody watching this, how the software gets tested, the processes involved, and so forth.
Yeah, I think it's a start, yeah. It's a pretty, I'm not sure how much, you know, there's a lot of people within Microsoft, I don't think, that understand what kind of a massive process it is to test something, you know, like Visual Studio or Office, and, you know, and that's what kind of testers get paid to think about is, you know, you're going to support whatever, and, did you think about this, that,
scenario,
the other thing, all the scenarios, these are all the platforms, these are all the... You know, what are the servicing implications of doing that particular feature and whatnot? So, It's a massive undertaking.
Never a day for a tester is the same as the day before, right? It's never identical. I mean,
well,
I mean is that there's always new challenges that come up. There's new things to deal with, things you didn't think of before. You're being creative a lot.
Well, not only do we have the challenge of testing the product, we have, you know, one of our biggest challenges is to, you know, try to jam as many, do as much testing as we can, as reliably as we can, over a long period of time in a varying environment, basically.
Right.
So, you know, you're dealing with builds that are anywhere from, you know, pre-RTM, you know, just really solid, where
right.
you just push a button and everything passes 100% almost every time.
Also,
stuff that's super pre-alpha that barely runs,
right.
And you know, the only thing we haven't really mentioned is that the other kind of aspect of our testing is that we do, you know, we do these things called bug bashes, which are really kind of, you know, we mentioned doing just ad hoc testing.
Right, right.
Well, we'll just sit down and, you know, we'll turn the testers loose on the product
right.
and have them just try interesting scenarios. We'll have areas of focus or things they want them
yeah.
to focus on.
Win coupons to
yeah, you know,
coffee or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
Also, people spend time in areas they're not normally used to, and they
yeah.
tend to find
yeah.
things better.
And then the other thing we do is we try to do app building, you know, a little bit, where we'll actually take a week and the whole team will go and, you know, build an app that goes from all the, you know, spans the whole product, all the way from, you know, designing a database to, you know, implementing and the UI on a form
right,
or a
right.
web server that, you know, pulls that data out, modifies it, and then shoves it back. So that's...
I think one thing that people take away is that generally a feature that would be going into a product will be cut before the quality testing of that feature is cut or reduced, I mean. Like, you're not going to say, oh, we want to sneak this feature and we're just not going to test it that well.
That's one of the prime considerations.
The bar is the same, and it's like you cut the feature if you don't have the resources to deal with it.
Exactly.
That.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that's good to wrap it up. And
okay.
Thanks for your time, Cam.
Well,
and,
thanks. Thanks for coming by. And
thanks.
All right.
Happy testing.
Thank you.
<Bye. laughs>